Okay, let me try this out and see if that is working. It looks like it is. Yep, I'm going to tweet this out. Share via tweet. Copy this link here. Quit epoch sec. Go copy link tweet. Okay. Me join that with that account. Join. I can watch who joins. So for anybody listening's recording, sorry, I didn't start off with anything. I had to kill the scheduled space because it was going crazy on me, as Twitter spaces typically do. So this is sounding great now. Hey Tommy, I'll bring you back up in just a moment. I'm just re tweeting this. If you don't mind, I'd appreciate you don't have to, but if you can, retweeting would be great. So I'm gonna hang on for a few minutes and after I tweet this, it give people an opportunity to join up. Let's see. Got that. Space. Okay, well, I'm just about ready. Maybe join that back there. Tweet this. Yeah, sorry, Tommy. Sorry for the delay. It's just technical challenges, community support, topic. Recreate space. Get that out there. All right. Share that. Tommy, let me bring you up now. I am ready to go. I am ready to go. Hey, there you are. Just making sure I can hear
I can hear you pretty well. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great. Wonderful. It only took 17 minutes that time. Yeah, I did one of these spaces early this morning and it happened again where, I started the scheduled space and it as soon as I did, it kept the space running with my EpochSec account in here. And it logged me out on my phone, so I had to go back and log in and try to get back into the space. And even then, I had problems, so I had to redo it then as well. But my other account here, Holy Macaroni, is on here. That's my main account, if you're not sure. But Have you, are you familiar with my project at all, or what I'm doing on here? If not, I can give you the quick scoop.
Yeah, I am familiar. In regards to, I guess you got received Catalyst funding to do some educational kind of material for cybersecurity, and you're doing these sessions for the community. And is that correct? I'm on the right track.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Yep, that's exactly what I'm
That's
doing.
exactly
Yeah.
what I'm doing. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. And that's actually kind of why I wanted to come up here and kind of introduce myself and just get a conversation going because
Sure.
I think what
Sure.
you're, yeah, I think what you're doing is really important. And just to give you an idea, I'm also part of Summon Labs and kind of part of ADAO too. And what we're trying to do is kind of come up with some onboarding educational type material for new people coming into crypto. And one of the things we've been thinking about is just the whole kind of the learning curve that goes with self-custody in general. But even before that, there's all the cybersecurity kind of underlying that too. And so I was just wondering, do you have in the future, are we able to, I don't know, get some sort of resources or I don't know, something material that we can provide to the community, or is that something we could you'd be able to work on in the future? Yeah, so I just wanted to kind of bring that up just as a general question because I see what you're doing very valuable, and then what we're trying to do as we bring on these Web2 companies and other companies that are kind of from the traditional world, we understand that that whole blockchain learning curve is going to include some of the cybersecurity stuff. And so when I saw you doing this stuff, it kind of it made my light bulb go off and said, you know, we should incorporate something like this in a onboarding education kind of course or package of materials, case studies of what they can learn and something like that. But sorry, yeah, kind of long-winded, a little bit long-winded there.
No, that's great. Yeah, I think I understand the general idea what you're asking, but you're asking, are you talking in terms of just the average person or projects developing something to where it'd be like a standard document they could follow, or
Or
did I
did I misunderstand?
misunderstand?
Correct. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry for being a little bit off there. But yeah, because what I'm thinking about is trying to educate individuals that are coming into the space with some of the stuff, resources or education material that you may have. And that's what, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. If you have any sort of the resources to share with individuals going forward, or yeah, this is just kind of me thinking out loud.
No, that's a great point. And before I answer that, Tony from Shosh, thanks for joining, man, or lady. But if you want to hop up, just request to speak. You're welcome to come up. And Tommy, I will answer your question. But Tony, for your reference, this is I if you're not familiar, this is I have a Catalyst funded project in Cardano, and I'm it's a cyber it's so that I can provide free services to folks to advise them with cybersecurity topics. I have an extensive cybersecurity background, blah blah blah. If you go to my main account on here, Holy Macaroni, you can look at my pinned tweet for all the details if you're not familiar with that. But again, if you want to talk, hop up and ask any questions, you are welcome to do that. Tommy, I'll get back to your question. So again, that was a great question. So my idea, right? So a little background. The first, I just started this project November 1st, right? The premise is I run this from November 1st to October 31st of next year. My proposal was to get funded for exactly 1 year of roughly about 10 hours a week of my time to dedicate that to the community. So my first week was going over some general basic things to look for. First of all, for the average user to look out for, how to identify things that could be malicious and what to do. And then also some basic tools for them to, that would be easy for them to understand how to use, like going to VirusTotal and putting in a file or a URL and seeing if it reports back that is bad or something like that, right? So I'm going to draft up a document or like a PowerPoint thing or something like that with all of that stuff from that conversation for people to reference. Also, I forget what I did last week. I did something. But this week, going over these hardening tips for different operating systems, I'm also going to write up a document for people to reference that so they don't have to continuously listen to the space and write things down. But to your point, that is a great idea also to write for my third, article, document, presentation, whatever it might be. For people to reference for onboarding and general cybersecurity things to consider. Yeah, but exactly what you said. I think that would be a very valuable thing to write up. I don't want to get too crazy with the idea, but I wonder if I could even make it something that is like a standard, like maybe community accepted or something that people could follow, right?
Yeah, best practices, right? Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was thinking about because as a group, we've been thinking about how to create these kind of onboarding education packages and what that would entail, right? And I think kind of creating these best practices, educating on best practices from the cybersecurity level, but then also just the education of onboarding on into crypto and all the various things that you should be wary of, and definitely with your insights in that, with your experiences, and then different case studies of what individuals should look out for. I think that would be very, very valuable, and having sort of reference material would be great, and kind of setting establishing these best practices, and I think that's, to be honest, I think it's going to be very important and could be very valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you, Tommy, if you don't mind, because I'm actually not writing anything down, I actually stopped helping my wife with something to do this, and I have other things to do after. So if you don't, if you know, I don't want to take too much of your time, but after we get done here, if you wouldn't mind just sending me those bullet points again after, it would be very helpful for me to remember that. I
I
typically need to
typically.
write things down, but.
Oh yeah, 100%. I can definitely do that. Give you a couple bullet points, basic ideas of what I was thinking about, and then just as a reminder too, that definitely I can do that later on tonight or tomorrow for sure.
Yeah, awesome, man. Yeah, and I you were not asking this, but and I presume Summon has the expertise in-house being Summon, but if you guys want to talk about anything, let me know. I have my website, not to shill or anything, I guess to shill it really, but epochsec.io. If you go on there and go to my contact page, I have my calendar on there. So if you guys if you find any usefulness in talking to me individually about this or something else, going to pick a time on my calendar or something we can talk. I'm really trying to build up talking to more individuals and more teams versus just doing the open spaces continuously, right?
Yeah,
But yeah.
100%, man. No, for sure. And I think this could be an opportunity possibly in the future, right? As we kind of refine this process, if you have, if we have different clients that we're onboarding, different protocols and teams, maybe this is, could be an easy way to kind of get you some extra stuff on the side, so to speak, in terms of other work or other clients that might be looking for specific things or not, right? I mean, it might just be some of this more general stuff, but who knows? Maybe there might be possibilities for other additional things there, but yeah, I appreciate it for sure.
Awesome, man. Yeah, thank you very much. I also really appreciate that. Yeah, so I've done, just to get started off here. I've done a couple of these spaces this week so far. The first one I had Lathiessen from Drip Drops, and then Michael Leisenfeld, Dr. Leisenfeld. He's the creator of, I forget the CIP number off the top of my head, maybe CIP 50. But I had them on one space, and it was a wonderful discussion. This morning I had Theory and Big Pay on there, and it was another great discussion with other points to make and stuff. But and sometimes I don't have anybody join, so it's kind of like a solo podcast. I'm just going through a list of things for people that based on the topic. And a lot of people do. I look at the analytics, and a lot of people do listen to these recordings later on. So, it's not lost, and it is useful time spent. So I don't know how much time you have to stay. But and then Tony again, what I'm doing here is just I'm going to walk through some general hardening tips for Linux and Windows and just operating systems in general. The disclaimer is it's not holistic, and there are plenty of other things to use. And I'll mention some tools, and there are other tools to use that I don't mention. But it's just kind of a way to give some general direction. And Tommy, if you're as long as you stay, leave whenever you want, stay as long as you want. But as long as you're here, I'll bring up some topics, and I'll probably pause and ask for your thoughts if you have any, right? Because I can talk all day, but I really love getting I, it's when people do join, I've found it very valuable in getting different perspectives.
Yeah,
But
I've got about 15 minutes that I can hang around, but definitely.
Okay. Well, let me mention. So the first thing then what I'll do is I'll start off with Linux specifically, and so I have a checklist, and again, the checklist can surely be expanded upon and improved and be more in depth, but at a high level, the first thing I do whenever I have a Linux system is I consider if I need SSH enabled or not, and then most of the time I do, right? SSH is remotely accessing other systems versus like on Windows you might use RDP. But anyway, so generally I always have SSH, right? But to have better, go ahead and install OpenSSH, and to have SSH more secure, the first two things you're going to want to do is disable root access for sudo, or I mean root access for SSH, as well as changing the default port of 22, right? So, for the obvious reason, right? If you leave the defaults in it, if you leave root account with the ability to SSH, root is the highest level privileged account on Linux. And then if you leave the default port of 22 enabled again configured, if there is a bad actor that is trying to compromise your system or trying to remotely access it, the first thing that they're always going to try is the default stuff, right? So if root and port 22 are still accessible, then that's the first thing they're going to try, and that's just another hurdle that they don't have to overcome if you leave that all set up right. So always set up an additional user, give it the appropriate permissions, and then pick whatever random high port number you prefer for SSH. Also, setting so those are. Those are the first two things. Next would be disabling password login authentication for SSH as well. So what I always tell people to do is immediately set up your encryption keys for SSH. So disable password login and use RSA. RSA 4096 is a good option, or you can use anything above 4096. RSA is probably the most commonly used thing. ED25519 is becoming very popular nowadays. It's arguably more secure. But honestly, RSA 4096 isn't, it doesn't make it any less secure. RSA 4096 is still a great option. But those two options for creating your private and public key is definitely what you should do. I wouldn't just use RSA by itself, right? By default, because that is not very secure. But anyway, that is another thing you should always do immediately as well, especially on servers that you're on Linux servers you're using for remoting into, if you have a stake pool and you have relay servers, you need to remote into them to do things. So at that point, it's very important to have those using that private and public key versus a password. I also always suggest to people using IDS and IPS, right? IDS is intrusion detection. That is looking for people using, for and Tommy, right? I try to keep everything as basic as I can. So I, my goal is not to, is more to educate the average user, right? So if I were to explain IDS, is very, very simply, it's looking for exploits and vulnerabilities.
I
But
really appreciate that. Because for me too, it is at a high level. But I can understand how important this is for the different individuals in my organization, and to make sure that they understand this stuff too, just to make sure that that's kind of the big thing too. But yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
awesome, and thanks for that comment, Tommy. So IDS, right? A simple option to use for IDS. So the difference between IDS and IPS is IDS is just looking for intrusions, then we'll report them to and log them. And that's useful if you're trying to look for certain things, or you're trying to just do it as a one-off, or you are concerned about impacting legitimate activity on your system. And then you have IPS, which is intrusion prevention system. So what intrusion prevention is, it's not only looking for that activity, but it's actually taking action on it, right? Blocking it, right? But for IDS, a simple one, just to give everybody one option, one idea would be using Snort. And my phone is away from me, so let me just pause for a moment and make sure nobody else has joined or wants to join up. Okay, so then, so that would be, an option for IDS. Let's see, IPS, maybe a simple option for that, probably one of the most commonly used tools would be fail to ban. So that's fail to ban with a two, the number two. A com a, an easy example I've given of how fail to ban is useful earlier was, a common attack by bad actors, other than, phishing and social engineering, all that stuff, is trying to DOS or DDoS a system. So what DOS is denial of service. DDoS is distributed denial of service. So that's not just one person or one system trying to create that DDoS or that denial of service. It could be one person or multiple people using multiple devices to try to, create more of a denial of service, so that's called DDoS. Right, so what they're trying to do is certain, they'll try different techniques such as HTTP flooding, they'll try UDP floods, they'll try ICMP floods, which is pinging a system. So what they'll do is they'll use one of those protocols to continuously hit that application or server or site. Right, and what they're trying to do is bring that down. They're trying to overload that application and bring it down. And then, furthermore, what they'll do nowadays, because it's very easy to block a plain old DDoS or DOS attack. So what they'll do is they'll take these HTTP floods and such, and they'll, some advanced techniques they'll try are to change the payload in every single request to the server. So, any of the HTTP requests, UDP, ICMP pings, they'll try to change a payload for every single one, which will then obfuscate it to the point that your DDoS protection may not pick that up. Just to go off on a side note really quick, some tools that you can use on your own. Oh, so some features you can do, right? So like Cloudflare has a DDoS protection service. I also recommend enabling rate limiting, things like that, right? But you can also try to penetration test your own system as well. I was listening to a guy on YouTube the other day. His name is Network Chuck. Network Chuck is an awesome dude and shares all kinds of cool stuff. But he was going through DDoS stuff and he was talking about some tools that are used. The first one, HPing 3 and Sephira. Sephira, I think, is a little more advanced, but these two tools you can use to try to hit your system and test it against DOS attacks. To help those tools, you can also go to a site called byob.dev. It's build your own botnet. You could create your own botnet service, and you can use those tools that will leverage that botnet to try a distributed denial of service. I would be very, anybody listening to this, I'd be very cautious on this. Do not use it for anything other than testing your own stuff. If you try it on anybody else's systems, there could potentially be legal repercussions for it, right? These tools are used in malicious activity. They are not malicious tools by in nature, right? But so you can use them for your own testing. But yeah, I just rambled off a bunch of things. Oh, I'll just also mention externally scanning your system for vulnerabilities, right? There are a lot of tools out there to do that, but you can also do it yourself. I mentioned the tools I've already mentioned, but if you want to look at all of the pen testing tools out there, you can use something called Kali Linux. Kali Linux is the Linux distribution that has pre-installed just tons of different pen testing tools, Nmap, the DDoS things I mentioned, just all sorts of things. You can go to, if you want an easy way to go about it, you can go to a something called Linode, Linode. It's just yet another cloud-hosted service like DigitalOcean and all of those other services out there. But they have a Kali Linux image, so if you're not familiar with how setting that up, you can just go in there and spin one up if you want to start playing around with it. Yeah, I just rambled all that off really quick. Tommy, I don't know how much more time you have left, but I'll go ahead and pause and see if you have any thoughts on that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate it. Those describing those things, the rate limiting, the penetration test, DDoS tools. I mean, those are things that would be great on a kind of aggregated reference kind of material form, for that kind of stuff. But yeah, no, I really appreciate that kind of information, and that's kind of the insight that I was hoping for in terms of creating best practices and getting some of those resources and tools to the community. But thank you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and that's my goal. So tomorrow's Thanksgiving here, and after that, the rest of my week will be dedicated to you. Because you have a good point, right? It's very hard in conversation to pull out the best information, right? I have all these notes from these conversations, and I'll definitely spend the rest of the week documenting all of that and sharing it out there. I'll specifically send it to you, make sure you see it, but I'll tweet it out. I'll put it on my website and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be very helpful, and I can also share it within the various individuals in my community and get feedback for you too. And then, yeah, it could be again something where people know you're in the community, and that if they have questions specific to cybersecurity, they can have someone, they can go to someone that has a bit of a reputation in this world, and also someone you can trust. And I think that's really difficult, generally speaking, kind of in this Web3 world, to get to a place where you can find people that you can actually trust enough to, especially when it kind of comes to cybersecurity stuff too. So, yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really appreciate that, Tommy, too. I really do, man. Tony, I'll just mention again, if you have any questions about anything I've mentioned, I'm not sure. I don't know you, so I don't know your level of knowledge, but if you have any questions about the things that I just rambled on about, please hop up and ask away. Let me see. Actually, I'm not even looking at my phone. I'm trying to keep it away from me because I keep having feedback issues. So, Tony, what I'll do is I'll invite you. If you want to accept it, you can. If you don't, that is fine. I just don't want to miss you requesting. So, anyway, yeah. So, oh yeah. Let me bring up this too. I won't talk into it too much in depth because I wasn't really prepared to bring it up. But on the first call, Michael Leisenfeld joined in. He is very knowledgeable on hardware and hardware security. He brought up a bunch of good tips. So if anybody's listening to this, if you go to my website, epochsec.io, and go to the information feed, you will find the recording, or you can go to my Twitter page, whatever, but you'll find the first recording of this week. I think it was on Tuesday morning or Tuesday at noon Eastern. But anyway, the first 15 or 20 minutes of that was some really insightful knowledge from Michael. And for the average user, it might be a lot to digest. But go ahead and listen to it and see if you extract anything out of that conversation. But at a high level, one of the things he brought up was the concern around open source and closed source hardware and firmware. You go buy an HP laptop or a Dell laptop, that's more or less that's really just closed source, and you don't know a lot about that firmware. You have no access to it. You don't know much about what's happening with that actual hardware, that sort of thing. One suggestion he brought up that I had never heard of, not really, I don't think, but I started digging into is he mentioned Librem, from a and I believe they're owned by Purism. So Purism is how it sounds. Librem is Librem. But what they do is they create all these devices. I think they make systems. They make mobile devices. They create open source firmware. But long story short, they create all of these things, and it's all open source hardware and firmware. So if you are somebody that is very into that, and you can understand what you're looking at, then you might want to go look into that. The points I would have to make for the average user would be just making, hardware wise, just making sure that you have disk encryption enabled, for example. So Windows is an easy one, BitLocker. Everybody has it. You have it. You just have to enable it. So what, in a nutshell, what's happening there is you enable BitLocker, which is a disk encryption tool. Whole disk encryption is, I guess, is a technical term. But what it'll do is it'll encrypt the master boot record using cryptographic keys. What that does is now when you boot that system, before post happens, right, loading of the operating system, it has to authenticate through that master boot, has some authenticate to be able to access that master boot record. If it cannot authenticate to those cryptographic keys, then it cannot get past the MBR, and it can then not post the operating system, right? So two key usages there, right? So you can, first of all, one of the benefits, I guess, you can consider, you can sort of look at it like two-factor authentication, because first of all, you have to authenticate to that pre-boot authentication for the encrypted MBR, master boot record. Then you have to put in your password and account information to log into the operating system. Now, the main benefit of this, why disk encryption is so important, is if someone gets a hold of your drive, they put it into another system, that drive with that operating system installed will not be able to load, because when that encrypted master boot record and those cryptographic keys are still sitting on your system. And it's not on the other system, right? So therefore, it won't even be able to post the operating system. Furthermore, now they won't, if someone got a hold of your actual laptop, you didn't have drive encryption installed with pre-boot authentication, right? Putting in your password to access the cryptographic keys, then they're already at the operating system. At that point, they can just brute force your password. So there's the benefits of looking at something like drive encryption and digging into hardware type stuff. I have Mr. Pay up here. Let me bring you up if you want to, Pay. I'll invite you up. Hop up if you would like to, sir. But yeah, I invited him up. I'm not sure if you requested. I'm keeping my phone away from me. I'm having a lot of feedback issues tonight with that. But yeah, those are some of the things I would consider. So half of those things apply, generally to all systems. Some of them are specific to Linux. But there's another tool in there in Linux called SE Linux. So if you set up SE Linux, that is a great tool for controlling things such as RBAC, role-based access control. So what users can access and what they cannot access. There's also, not to be confusing, but there's also rule-based access as well. So you can create individual rules to do certain things that allow certain access, specifically to things such as different ports that are available, processes running, files and directories, etc. What else? I think that's basically it for Linux. That was a lot of things I went through there. I also like to use, I'm always using netstat specifically for with the Tulpin switch. So netstat dash TULPN. That is a very clean way of looking at your active listening ports and their associated IPs. But if you don't want to use netstat Tulpin, you can always use nmap, which is a network scanning tool, or you can, there, I think nowadays you can also do SS Tulpin versus doing netstat Tulpin, and I think SS Tulpin looks a little cleaner even. Anyway, so that's generally things that, those are things I would generally practice on Linux, tools and methodologies to follow to check your own system, right? You don't want to just rely on a third-party security tool. You want to come at it with a layered security mentality, right? So, using security tools out there, setting all these different things up I mentioned, and actively testing your own systems and looking for vulnerabilities and things running. I always tell people as well, keep an active eye on all of the applications you have installed. It's very common for us to, over the years of having a system, to install different things throughout that time and leave them installed. The problem there is every application you have installed is another potential attack vector for a bad actor. A lot of companies out, it's very common for companies to come out with version 2.0 or 3.0, and maybe after a year or 2 years, they remove support for 1.0. And well, one of the meanings behind that is they'll also stop supporting it in terms of patching it when new vulnerabilities are introduced, right? So you could have an old application on your system that is very vulnerable, not being patched anymore, is now and now a new attack vector for a bad actor. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna really appreciate those tips, and definitely there's several layers of security that has to be taken into consideration, and the active monitoring and ongoing monitoring is critical, like, from what you're saying. I'm gonna have to actually jump off now, but I was wondering, when is your next space for this kind of stuff?
To give you a long-winded answer, I'm doing about 5 of these per week on the same topic, to meet my requirements for the project, but also to have an open, I like to have the same topic for the whole week to fill in the time, but also, if people jump up and start asking other questions, that's my main purpose, right? But and I'll do a different topic every week, and I'll revisit old topics throughout the other weeks. But I'll be doing another one on Sunday morning. Pei actually recommended me to try that out. So sometime Sunday morning, probably 9 or 10 a.m. Eastern, I'll start one up and hopefully get a bunch of people joining in. Like I said, some of my other ones throughout the week, I had some other people jump in, had great conversations like you did tonight. But yeah, next one will probably be Sunday. And routinely, what I'll do is probably set them up for like 1 in the morning, 1 in the evening, which would be Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then probably one either midday Friday or morning or midday on Sunday. So I try to hit different times and give more people a chance to join.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Thank you for the heads up on that. I'll certainly try to jump into at least one of them throughout the week in terms of the various topics. And I'll get in contact with you in the DMs in regards to kind of going forward and trying to create some of these best practice documentation and kind of reference materials for the community. But yeah, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure, Tommy, and likewise, man, I reciprocate that. I really appreciate your time and joining in this conversation this evening. And yeah, just reach out to me, man. We'll set something up. Yeah, absolutely. Because the more individual or team sessions I set up, I'll probably do less of the Twitter spaces. I'll always do a Twitter space every week, but they might reduce if 1 week I get more people wanting to meet with me individually or something, right? But yeah, thanks
Yeah,
again, Tommy.
absolutely. And I think that it's so valuable that we want to like I think about like getting this material onto paper, right? Some of your insights, some of your experience, and then being able to share that with the community, because cybersecurity is so important at a kind of base level when you're onboarding individuals into this space, right? And it's a whole kind of learning curve just to get into crypto, but that cybersecurity kind of base layer is always going to be there, and it's kind of changing and ongoing. And having people like yourself in the community and having the opportunity to have conversations or consultations as a team with you is going to be, I think that's going to be really important going forward. And having, like I said, that reputation and someone you can trust in the community is super important. But yeah, again, thank you very much, and I'll certainly catch you later. Take care. Thank you.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks again, Tommy. You have a great evening. Yeah, okay. Tony, I think you're still here. Yeah, I'm going to go through some Windows things as well now. If you have any specific questions about these topics as well, go ahead and I'll hop up. I'm willing to help you out however I can. Yeah, I plan on doing spaces. I'm going to do a variety of spaces in the future. Not just topics like this. I might 1 week I will do something around mentoring and advising people on how to get into entry level cybersecurity and kind of the paths they could follow and things to consider and do. Things like that. 1 week I'll kind of dig into some of the things I've seen over my time, the ransomware cases and what they look like, things like that. So it'll be kind of a variety of topics. So if anybody, I'll just continue through these topics. Well, hello, Alex Knotts. If you would like to hop up and join and discuss and ask any questions or anything, you are more than welcome to anything security related at all. So yeah, long time techie. Okay, so crypto space. Okay, yeah, what I'll do is I will give me 1 moment here. Yeah, I'll go ahead and invite you up. I think I saw you request. Yep, there we go. Okay, Alex, are you up here? I'm not sure.
Can you hear me now?
Twitter Spaces. Yeah, I can hear you great. Yep, it doesn't show that you're a speaker, but I can hear you.
Okay. So I just ducked out of work a little early to get home and work remotely, and I popped into your space because I saw there was only four or five people, but you were talking about security. So I may not be the most informed person. I'm 55, and I've been putting it off for years, but I'm finally learning Linux. So that's one of the reasons I popped in. So I'm a crypto enthusiast. I listen to Big Pay all the time. Thank you very much for all of your podcasts. But I'm going to have to simply bow out and be informed by you all because I am completely unqualified to talk on the topic.
No, Alex, that's wonderful, man. Yeah, I'm. You know, and just to give you a quick 30-second idea of the premise here is it's really to help out folks like you. You know, I was funded through Catalyst. I'm not sure how familiar, you know, if you've listened to Big Pay, I actually work for Big Pay too. But if you've listened to him, then you know that, you know, there's Catalyst out there in Cardano. So I got funded through Catalyst, to provide my cybersecurity services to everybody in the community for 1 year, right? I've been in cybersecurity for 13 years. I actually direct a team of consultants for a major security company. I've been in Cardano for years now, and I do a lot with stake pools. And so I just wanted to be able to bring my knowledge and really bring awareness on security to the community without charging anybody for my time, right? So that's why I kind of said, hey, Catalyst, would you fund me to give everybody free services? So yeah, that's great you joined. And then, you know, I do a few of these spaces every week, and each one I'll have a couple of people join, but the conversation is not on deaf ears. People do go back to my website and listen to the recordings and gain a lot of information about that. I'll also be documenting all of this as well. So when these spaces are over, I'll go ahead and write documents and put them on my website. And the last thing, Alex, I'll mention to you because it doesn't sound like you were familiar with my project. I have my website is called epochsec.io. Oh yeah, and by the way, Holy Macaroni on this Twitter space is my main account. That's my main active account. But if you go to my website, you can see all that information there, but you can also go to the contact page. If you're curious about anything specific and you just want to have a one-on-one conversation, you can go to my contact page, pick a time and set a meeting, and we'll talk. But anyway, that's enough shilling my project to you. I just want to make sure you had all the good knowledge.
Okay, can you give like a quick 101 on what you do? So, you know, my understanding is blockchain is secure and immutable. So how does this dovetail into Linux? Where does Linux, is this like, you know, stake pool operator security, or where do you fit into the overall picture?
Yeah, I am glad you asked that. That is a wonderful question. So I fit into all of it. So I'll answer your question by explaining something about the premise of all of this that people like, you know, it's very easy to lose the real perspective of what's happening here. So I am glad and willing and able to help people in anything, general security practices for the average user. I've already supported a couple of teams that are building projects on Cardano. If anybody is looking to build a stake pool and they don't understand basic Linux security, I'll help them with that. Or if it's just Bob or Nancy at home that just wants general support on knowing how to be more safe just on a daily basis, right? So the entire sphere there, I can help with. Now, you know, and the reason being, and one thing you mentioned triggered a thought on that I've shared a handful of times in the last couple of weeks. We're all in blockchain, we're all in crypto, we're all interacting with it. But if you think about it, you know, everything that you're doing on the blockchain is about 5% of your actual online activity. You know, 95% of everything you're doing is still traditional quote unquote web two things or traditional internet activity, online activity, right? You're still using social media. You're still communicating with people directly. You're still using email. You're still using all these different applications and tools with user accounts and passwords. So all of the common attacks over the last 20 years, from phishing and social engineering to credential harvesting, all of these different topics are still very prevalent and still very at everybody is still very much at risk for all of those general topics, right? So, you might have a stake pool, or you might be using a crypto wallet, or you might be making some sort of transaction on a blockchain. But to get to that point, you're still doing all of the things you've done over the last 20 years on the internet, right? So, a big awareness item I really try to get across to people is, you're doing very little on the blockchain right at this point. Maybe years down the road that will change. But right now, again, just to beat a dead horse, everything we're doing, most of it is still the same stuff we've always done, right? I'll pause there. I didn't know if that generated anything else.
I muted out. So yeah, I agree. So yeah, it's the overall picture. Blockchain's the new kid on the block. But yeah, I'm doing, I do 3 or 4 trades a week on blockchain. But other than that, 97% of my other efforts and activities are just regular internet stuff.
Indeed. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Alex. And just be, just to even add on to that, even when you're doing that trade, you're still using an application that somebody created that you have to either install or access through a web browser, right? So 100%. Web browsers have, yeah, right. So, I just try to make sure people understand that. I lose that thought a lot too, right? I'm doing something on the blockchain. My mentality goes, I'm just here in the crypto sphere. I'm not out there on the internet anymore, but when in reality I am, right? But yeah, did you have any, I went through some general Linux things already, but did you want to specifically hear anything about Linux? Because what I'm doing this week is just talking about general hardening tips for a Linux system or Windows, right? But since you're here, I'm willing to talk about any of that, but...
Yep. So I literally popped on and missed whatever you said. As you made me the speaker, I had just popped on. So I missed any hardening tips.
Okay.
I don't want you to have to repeat yourself, but I missed
it. I don't mind. I repeat myself continuously. It's just what I do. I don't mind. but for your sake, again, what I'll do is I'll just kind of ramble off my checklist of, and again, disclaimer, right? This is not all encompassing. There's still plenty of other things that can be done, but an easy checklist to follow, if you're building a Linux server to try out to run a Cardano relay or a stake pool, or if you're trying to just use it for, learning Python or whatever it is, right? Some of the first things I'll do is I'll disable, and if you are not familiar with what SSH is, just interrupt me and I'll explain SSH. But
secure shell for logging into another computer.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, the very first two things I do is I disable root access for SSH. I create my own user account and I disable root from being able to SSH. Okay. Also, the very first thing I'll do is I'll change a default port of 22 for SSH. Right. The point being there, the first thing that a bad actor is going to try to do when they're trying to access your system and compromise it, they're going to try all the default things that come with the system, right?
See what you
did. Yeah. So in continuing down the list, the very next thing I'll do is disable password login authentication for SSH, right? You don't want to allow people to, yourself or anybody else, to remote into something using a username and password. The simple fact being people can easily brute force passwords. Yep. So what you do in lieu of that is set up your encryption keys, so private and public keys. Two methods I always recommend is RSA with 4096 or above, and then ED25519. So again, that's RSA or ED25519. those are encryption techniques, and those are very two very secure methods to create those keys, right? So I always do that. The next thing is I might make sure I have an IDS option, intrusion detection. Snort is a good option. It's very commonly used and very easy to use. So there's a lot of knowledge out on using Snort. The next one would be intrusion prevention. So versus IDS, where IPS is not only looking for that information like IDS, but it's actively taking action on that. Without getting too advanced and using a bunch of other tools, a first good step would be use a tool called fail to ban. That's fail to ban with a number two. What that does is, and I've given this example earlier, and I'll give it to you, Alex, is think about DDoS or DOS, right? If again, I won't explain those terms unless you interrupt me, and I'm glad to explain them. So fail to ban is a great option because it'll detect those DOS or DDoS attacks, and it'll automatically block those IPs and stuff, right? So that's a great option to start off with. Also, UFW, Unified, I think it's Unified, but it's a firewall that you can set up on Linux. It's extremely easy to use. If you just watch one YouTube video on UFW, you already know how to use it. But it is great for, you know, I always tell people to, you know, you got one of two options, either blacklisting or whitelisting, right? So you either start off with allowing everything and blacklisting things as you need to. Or you start off with blocking everything and only allowing the things you want, called whitelisting, right? Blacklisting is better for if you just have a Linux laptop at home and you do all sorts of things on it, because you don't want to make it difficult on you to access things. Now, if you're running a Linux system for a stake pool or whatever thing, and it's just that one application you're using it for, it's much easier to start off with whitelist. So you go into UFW, you block everything by default, and then you just allow the specific IPs and ports that you need. That's a wonderful security thing to do, and it gets you very far along the way of being secure. I always suggest to people too to use check out something called SE Linux. That's to control things such as RBAC or role-based access for users. You can also use it for rule-based access as well, for ports, processes, things like that. Another thing, furthermore, would be to, if you're not familiar with all these tools like Snort, Nmap, things like that, then you can try, what I would suggest people to do is go out and try out Kali Linux. Kali Linux is a Linux distribution that specifically contains pretty much all of the penetration testing tools out there.
So I downloaded Ubuntu and Kali, so at least I'm familiar with it, yeah.
There you go. That's wonderful. Yeah. And even if you don't become a guru within all those pen testing tools in Kali, at least you'll have a basic understanding of things. Either you'll have a basic understanding of what bad actors are trying to do, or you might at least have the right terminology and knowledge on, you know, things to consider and look out for on your own system, right? But yeah, Kali Linux is a wonderful starting off point.
So what I'm using, just from our conversation, one should not naively go in and try and start some kind of relay node or some kind of stake pool, single stake pool operator, that just by what you rattled off, my only superficial knowledge of what's going on is, if you do not take quite an extensive effort to protect yourself, you will get hacked and whacked in short order. Because you know, all the penetration, there's people actively out there seeking to, you know, they're crawling the internet looking for the open ports and will immediately begin their attacks, I assume. So if one pursues one of these endeavors, you need to be fairly well armored and prepared for battle when you enter when you go live, basically.
Yeah, no, that you're spot on there, Alex. And a few thoughts that come to mind, right? Yeah, and there are people out there that are actively trying to collect information You know, personal information, server information, vulnerabilities, systems that are exposed, and they'll go on the tour. They'll go on tour, the Onion and or the dark web, as a lot of people call it, and try to sell that information. And other bad actors will then use that information to expose. Right? So they do that.
To exploit you. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're selling the exploits to the exploiters, you know? Yeah, so that's exactly what happens. What else? And it's not that I don't know how to put it. I guess it's not that you will get compromised, but the thing is, right, like I do a lot, I work with forensics teams a lot, right, in ransomware cases, and in doing that I've gotten into the habit of never saying something definitively, right, because then you can then, like, my mentality is now I'm legally liable for that, right? So it's just a bad habit or maybe a good habit, I don't know, but
The likelihood, if you're unprotected, the likelihood, you know, it just becomes more and more. And if, you know, you talk to or you read reports of people that monitor their own websites and, you know, you see where, you know, from the different countries that were attempting to hack you or attempting to break into your system, there'll be lots of them. But, you know, if you're running a financial thing, if you're running a stake pool where you have potentially, you know, in Cardano, staked items are safe. I could be wrong. You would know more than I. But you know, if there's dollars to be made, someone's out there, trying to get them from you digitally. You're not safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's the whole thing. That's why I mentioned, all of these different things to do, because, you know, when you're considering all of these options, always start off with the mentality of layered security approach, right? So, there is no one thing out there that is going to 100% protect you. You know, that's why I was talking to someone the other day and they were asking about fail to ban and rate limiting and stuff. And I said, well, in order to protect yourself against DDoS, you'll want to maybe use fail to ban. You'll maybe want to enable the DDoS option in Cloudflare, and you'll want to use rate limiting. So it'll block people when there's too much access happening from them, right? So not one thing is foolproof, right? So use different options out there to layer your security and improve your odds of not getting compromised, right? You know, everybody thinks it won't be me until it is, right?
I think of it, there's different fronts and there's different layers of abstraction. So a front would be your open port or things like this, but then there's layers of abstraction. So the further you go up the layers of abstraction layer, the less likely they are to happen, but they are a potential vulnerability. So you just have to work up that stack until you finally get to the highest layer of, you know, short of them showing up to your house with a 45, you can't really protect against that, but work up the abstraction layers for what could potentially happen. Yeah. And you know, what's the threat and what's the likelihood, right?
Yeah, absolutely, right? And, you know, I work with a lot of enterprise customers, and that, you know, there's another approach to always consider in this. I'm not advising people to completely 100% lock everything down, but giving them the options out there, because there's an approach to follow called security versus availability, right? The more secure you make something, the more safe you are. But in doing so, the less available and easy things are, easy things are to access, right? So
you could put a lock on every door in your house, but it's your rooms are unavailable to use within your house. Yeah,
exactly, right? And so, you know, it's, you know, I would just suggest to everybody that listens to this recording or whatever, just find what works for you and what risk level you're willing to accept, right? Yeah, I didn't get into any of the Windows stuff. Hey, Sebastian, I saw you joined. I have no idea if you're familiar with my project, but if you have any security-related questions at all, you're willing to hop up and ask them. The entire realm of security. If you have anything, please hop up and let me know. But yeah, man, the The Windows stuff, now just making sure I cover all of that, I'll just rattle it off real quick without digging into it. And if you guys have any questions, let me know. But again, I mentioned encrypting your disk with BitLocker, things like that. Starting off with fresh Windows installs, the first time you get a system, there's a bunch of bloatware installed on it, right? Lathisan mentioned a tool to me the other day. It's called Sycnex, Sycnex, I believe. You can find he actually shared that on my Twitter Space tweet earlier today or yesterday, so you can go find that. But it's something that will wipe all of that off. But also another option is to the first time you buy a laptop, go in there and completely wipe it, reset all of the partitions, and then install a fresh, clean version of Windows. Obvious the two points being the first point, something I mentioned earlier. The more applications you have installed on your system that you are not using, right, the more possible attack vectors there are or attack avenues there are for bad actors, right, if there's vulnerabilities in those applications. Also, just simply, right, they're just taking up resources. They're taking up extra memory that could be used for things that you actually want to do, right? Now, the other thing I would say, keeping your systems updated. There are things out there called zero-day attacks that can be introduced in updates. But for the average layman user that is not familiar with how to dig into that, just keep your systems up to date more or less, for the most part. You can also use sysinternals. Sysinternals is a tool created by a guy named Mark Rusinovich. It's actually managed and released by Microsoft. But it does all sorts of things. It has tools in there called PS where you can. Where is my list at in here and topics to mention? Anyway, I can't find it. But anyway, it does all sorts of things that I mentioned about Linux earlier. You can look at all of your. You can dig more into your actively running port processes, your listening ports, all of that stuff. There's also tools in there for sysinternals called PS where you can monitor all of that stuff. You can execute things. You can run scripts and do a myriad of things. Because all of these tools that are available on Linux and easy to use are not so on Linux or Windows for the most part. So that's just a good option to look into. What else? And then back to getting that brand new laptop with Windows, and you reinstall Windows. Make sure that you're not logging on with your main Microsoft account, which is an online account. Make sure you create a local account. Make sure you disable location tracking. And then there's another option in there to disable also letting applications use advertising IDs. So you can disable that option as well. So basically, what those two things are doing is identifying where you are and what you're doing. Always go turn them off. Microsoft calls those features. I call those intrusion options. So yeah, I just rattled off a bunch of things for Windows, and I'll pause there.
On your website, do you have like a one pager or maybe a multi-pager of the recommendations to do so I could just go download it and start checking it off? Or how do you work that?
I'll tell you what I will do is I'll follow you now to make sure I remember you. And my plan is later this week and this weekend, all of these conversations I had, I'm going to write them all up in documents and I'm going to post them on my website. So I'll let you know when I post them, and so you can go ahead and read through them.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And again, you don't have to, but just putting the offer out there. If you do go to my website again, you can go to my contact page and set up an individual call with me if you want to dig into anything specific and keep that private. We can do that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. For my very, very noobish understanding, you have really highlighted, increased my awareness of some basic security things and how many tools are out there to protect yourself, and that if you're not using them in Linux, you should be using them, and then also the Windows exploits. But thank you. I'm just taking an interest in Linux, and I just happened to hit this at the right time. So thank you for all your words of wisdom here.
You're welcome, Alex. And if as you're going along the path of messing with Linux, if you run into a roadblock, reach out to me and let me know, and I'll help you out. Tony, I saw you came up on speaker. I'm not sure we did. My apologies. Do you have a question or anything to share?
No, I'm all right. I got about 30 years IT experience. I just know enough to know that I'm insecure all the time. So I'm just
Tony. I saw you came off of mute, but I cannot hear you. If you have a headset on something, maybe that's muted as well. I'm not sure.
I'm hearing him.
No, I don't got no headset on.
You hear him? Okay.
I don't really have any questions.
That is strange. Tell you what, Twitter Spaces is a big old mess sometimes. Tony, I don't hear you. Let me turn this up and let me see if that helps. Go ahead again, Tony.
Yeah, I don't have any questions. Do you hear me now?
Man, yeah, I just don't hear you. My apologies. That really sucks. Alex, what is he asking? I would love to help him out. I just can't hear him.
Bear with me. I was grabbing cranberries. He was saying that he's got 30 years of IT experience, and he knows he's insecure. But no specific questions.
Okay. Well, Tony, if you do come up with any specific questions, just reach out to me specifically. You can... I would suggest reaching out to my main account, Holy Macaroni, on here, though. And if you do have any specific questions, just let me know. Yeah, and I'm not entirely sure of the sentiment you were sharing, Tony, but I hope you can hear me, even though I can't hear you. But, yeah, I work with people in all sorts of IT roles on a daily basis, and I've done that for 13 years. And you've been in IT a lot longer than me. But it's always interesting talking to IT folks. And, you know, the thing is, we all have our wonderfully specific, unique, genius skill sets, but not everybody's familiar with things to do to protect their systems and increase their security and stuff. So, you know, it's always, I get to work with people in every possible job role in IT. So it's always really enlightening talking to them. But, yeah. I'm not sure why you can hear me that. Maybe Elon Musk will make Twitter Spaces better. Yeah. Yeah, anyway, I think that's about it for now. Let's see here. Make sure. Yeah, I think that's about all I had. Tony and Alex, I appreciate you guys joining and listening in here. I had somebody else in earlier having a great conversation with them, so that's wonderful. I do these every week, and I'll do different topics. If you guys have something, again, I apologize for beating a dead horse, but if you want to talk individually, reach out to me. But again, I'm running these spaces every week. I'll do different topics. Like next week, I might go into how to get into cybersecurity and kind of the paths people can follow and things they'll want to do and kind of mentor people along that line. I also will spend 1 week going through my experiences in cybersecurity around working ransomware cases and forensics and things like that with large enterprises, kind of give people something fun and interesting to listen to. I'll cover all kinds of wide ranges of topics throughout this project. But yeah, man, I really appreciate you guys joining. It means a lot. And again, just reiterate, people, I watch the analytics. People do watch these recordings and do get a lot of information out of them. So it is time well spent for sure.
Thank you for hosting the space and running a
service. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely, man. And thank you. I hope you all have a good evening. If you're in the U.S., I hope you have a good holiday and Thanksgiving. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
Happy Thanksgiving. Good night.
Good night.